to the Mishnah on Yud Amud Aleph. Yes, a Mishnah. Not only that, what I'm expecting is that we will get to the next Mishnah. Because I don't want to leave us in the middle of an inyan when we're going to be taking a 2-week gap. That wouldn't be so healthy. So, Mishnah says, Beis Shammai Omrim, Lo Yitol Elim Ke Nianea Mi Ba'od Yom. This, we saw this already in our discussion about some Chas Yom Tov and overriding concerns for Muktzah. Beis Shammai says, you are only allowed to take a bird for Shechita on Yom Tov if you moved the bird before Yom Tov. You have to physically pick up the bird and move it. Beis Hillel says, no, you don't need to. It is sufficient that you verbally identify the birds before Yom Tov. Now, there's a side problem here, which no one is going to discuss, which is, we're going to say later in the Masechta, you're not allowed to trap animals on Yom Tov. So how are you taking these birds on Yom Tov? So Shita Mekubet is on this, quotes a view of Tosfos. I didn't track it down to see where the Tosfos is from. But he quotes a view in Tosfos that we're talking about very young birds, which can't fly. So therefore, there will be no issue, of trapping when you pick them up on Yom Tov. But that's a side note. What the Gemara wants to know is, what exactly are Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai discussing here when they have this debate as to whether, like Beis Shammai, you have to physically move the birds, or whether it is sufficient to just verbally identify the birds you're going to want to use. So they tie it into a practice which evidently was at least current in their day, which was that when you breeded birds, when you bred doves at any rate, you would leave a pair of doves in the dovecot along with the mother bird that you're using to lay these eggs as some kind of companion for her. Where exactly this fits into secular practices or general practices for breeding birds is not clear to me. I did a little searching around online trying to find if anybody of the experts talked about this. I didn't see anybody who did so. But that's where this comes into play. And in fact, it was a standard practice for us. If you take a look on the sheet, actually, I'll show it to you now, even though we're not quite ready for it. But take a look at source base on the sheet. The Mishnah in Bava Basra. Halokech peros shovach mechavero. If I make a deal with somebody, Gerard has a dovecot, and I say, I want to buy the doves that you breed in your dovecot. So the rule is, mafriach brecha rishona. I have to leave the first set of birds there. Mafriach is a funny verb. I would have taken it to mean you have chased them away, right? But the way that the Rashbam is about to explain it in Source Gimel means you leave them to produce flowers, lifroach. Unless lifroach there means to fly also, which could be, I suppose. But the point is, you leave them there. And the Rashbam explains in Source Gimel, halokeach brecha rishona, halokeach Brecha Rishona Meiniach Lifroach Im Ha'im. The purchaser has to leave the first set to fly with or to flower, however you like it, with the mother. Sha'osa Lomachar, because those he didn't sell. Shekain Derech Hamocher in Peros Shovach, because that's the way of people who sell that which their Shovach, their Dovka, produces. La'akev Brecha Rishona Liyos Tzavas Li'imahos or La'amuhus Li'iskayim HaShovach. To leave them to be company for the breeding birds, for the maintenance of the Dovka. Pen Yivrechu Ha'imahos, because the concern is that if all of the birds are gone, then the breeding birds are going to flee. They're going to leave. They're going to say, I guess this isn't the happening place. He didn't sell his entire dovecot. He just sold the product of the dovecot. So these stay. The Hilkach Mistamagam Brecha Rishona Shoshana Zu, he gave him a Shovach to Zoe Kiyum a Shovach. So we assume that the person who sold never intended to sell that first the first pair. So that's what this Gemara now is going to be predicated on, this idea that you didn't sell, you didn't, not just sell, but you didn't get rid of your first pair. So take a look in the Gemara. Amar Rav Chanan Bar Ami. Rav Chanan Bar Ami says, this debate between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai as to whether it is sufficient to verbally identify the birds you're going to want for Yom Tov, or whether you have to pick them up, he says, Machlokes Bebrecha Rishona. He says, the debate is specifically regarding the first pair, because I have reason to believe that you wouldn't take those. Beis Shammai says that we are concerned that in the event that you beforehand think to yourself, I'm going to take the first pair, this pair that normally is left there, if that's what you're thinking, then we are concerned that the next day you are going to change your mind. That's our consideration. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi Gazrinan, he says, Kishaki lehu lamachar, when you pick them up tomorrow, asi le'imluche, you are apt to change your mind, v'chayis alayu, and have mercy on them. V'havi le'tiltosh lalitzarech, in which case picking them up will turn out to be a picking up which is not for a need, because you're actually not going to use them. However, if you actually handle them already before Yom Tov for Shechita, and you didn't change your mind then, we are not concerned then that you're going to change your mind later on. So the way Rashi understands this,
picking up has nothing to do with the designation so much. It has to do with if you pick them up then, seems like he's
the picking up is meant to demonstrate that you're sure.
That you're sure.
That you're not going to back out. Right. That's the idea. Because what we want to prevent is that on Yom Tov, you don't pick them up and put them down. That's what we would like to avoid. Pick it up before Yom Tov. And that way, it's more likely that you will have thought through, do I really want to do this?
Which is not the general way we understand taking something that would otherwise be mukhs and setting it aside.
Why?
Like a rock, for example.
Oh, that's for sure, because... Right.
It's not a question of chasala, right? Here there's a particular feel, meaning that if you wouldn't be chasalal, you wouldn't have to do any designation beforehand. If it's something you're not chasalal...
Well, no, I would, but I would be settled. I would settle for base hillels, verbal. Normally, I don't need to do a physical action to dedicate something. Normally,
it's only because I'm chasalal I have to do something physical to demonstrate I'm not chasalal.
Correct.
But if it's something that I wouldn't have rahmanis on, it's not a living thing. You know,
there would be no need.
If there's no need to change my mind, right? There would be no need at all.
Right.
So you're saying that Beit Shammai holds that under other circumstances, you could make something not mukhsav by makshav.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's unique to the case of the birds, and not only that, but unique to the case of this pair that you're used to leaving with the mother. Other birds, no problem. It's only this pair of birds that is an issue.
Not referring to birds, but other objects or other...
Correct.
Things.
Okay. Correct. As the Gemara continues, I'm going to come back to this line in a second, but just to finish the line in the Gemara, Aval v'brecha shnia, but if you're dealing with the second one, and we don't just mean the second one, but anything other than the first... It is sufficient for you to simply stand there and say, I'm going to take that bird and that bird. And that's it. That's all within Rashi's understanding. The Rambam is not going to disagree in terms of the halacha, but the Rambam is going to disagree a little bit in terms of the logic and what my concern was. If you take a look at source Aleph on your sheet, I brought you the Rambam in his Perusha Mishnayos. He explains what the concern is differently. He says, "Eino ella b'brecha rishona shel osa hashovach b'lvad." It's only regarding the first pair, this pair that you normally leave in there. Ki mipnei she'adam chas al brecha rishona. Since a person really will often say, "I'd rather leave this here," literally chas, he has mercy on it. On this first pair, Omer, we say, "Shema yimloch v'yachsho shelo yikchem." Maybe he's going to change his mind and decide not to take them. And then he's going to change his mind on Yom Tov and say, you know, I really do want a meal after all. And then he's going to take them. In other words, it's potentially a greater problem that Rambam is articulating. As opposed to Rashi, who said the problem is that on Yom Tov, you're going to pick them up and decide you don't want them, and now you pick them up shlo letzorech. Rambam's concern is that, let's say Yom Tov is starting at 7 o'clock, at 5 in the afternoon I'm going to decide, I don't really want them. And therefore, they're mukhsa. And then on Yom Tov, I'm going to change my mind and decide that I do want to take them. And now I'm taking mukhsa birds. That's the way the Rambam understands it. And so he says, pick them up before Yom Tov. Picking them up before Yom Tov presumably will help because
you're showing you want them.
Well, not just that you're demonstrating that you want them, but because it demonstrates that you understand the rules, that you have to do a dedication. You know, you've demonstrated that you understand the way that this works. Now, here's a funny thing.
So there is a difference. There's a difference in halacha also, according to Rambam. Because the Rambam, the way you're saying the Rambam now is, it means that the Rambam requires you to do, according to Beit Shammai.
Well, no, that's the Rambam explaining Beit Shammai's point of view, not paskening. This is just the Rambam explaining Beit Shammai's svar.
But the way he understands Beit Shammai is radically different than Rashi to the sense that there'll be a different halacha. There's a different halacha outcome. Halachic outcome.
Why?
Because one, because according to the Rambam, it seems that there's a Beis Shammai requires some kind of physical setting aside. According to Rashi, there's no
what
physical law.
There's
a machshava. No.
Rashi is letting Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says physically. Either way, Rashi or Rambam. Either way, it's physical. It's just that Rashi explains that the reason for the physical is because if you pick it up now...
Well, according to Rambam, why is the old Dafke Bebricha, and so why is the Rambam only the Bebricha Rishon?
Because the Bebricha Rishon is the one you're most likely to change your mind on. You have reason to change your mind. Yeah, no, there's no distinction in that. The interesting thing, this Fasema's notes, is in Source Dalet. The Rambam in Hilchos Yom Tov, when he brings this halacha, he says, "Avzin v'tarnagolin v'yonim shebabayis." Right? Not yavanim, despite Hanukkah. So these birds of various kinds that are in the house, hare ilu muchanim, they're already designated. Beinan tzrichin zimun, they don't need to designate them before yantif because it's understood. This is, you know, your meal waiting. This is where the fresh birds are. Aval yone shova, yone aliyah, but birds in the davkat, or birds in the loft, v'tziparim shekinu, v'tfichin, or babira, or birds that have nested in jugs, or wherever they are, or in the building somewhere, or paradise, or in the orchard, hare elu mukta, those are mukta. Right? This is, we're going to see a similar idea later in the Masechta, much later in the Masechta, when they talk about the wood that's in your shed outside, versus stuff that you brought into the house to use. So these birds that are in the outer areas, those are not considered designated yet, they're mukta. V'tzarech lezamein mibo'erev, and you have to dedicate them the night before. V'lomar and say, elu ve'elu ani notel ve'eno tzarech lenaneh. He says, those you have to say, I'm going to take this one, I'm going to take this one. However, there is no need for you to move them. That's Beis Hillel, right? But he didn't make any distinction at all between first brecha, second brecha.
Right.
So the answer could be simply because he's passing like Beis Hillel. Right? The answer is he's passing like Beis Hillel. But the Sfasemes is bothered by this. Why didn't the Rambam at least mention the potential distinction between them? I thought maybe it's because they no longer, by the Rambam's day, they no longer had the practice of leaving the first pair. It wasn't Lamaisa. It could be that was a practice in the Gemara day, but 1,000 years later, you know, I mentioned, I think it was after you were already inside, but I looked around trying to find, you know, where this practice, I can't find any.
You leave a first pair, breeding pair, right? Is that a breeding pair?
Well, it's not a breeding pair. It's actually to be with the breeder.
To be with the breeder.
Yeah, company.
So are they modeling?
I don't think it's modeling. The problem is that I don't have any sort of general record of this practice. So all I have to go on here is the Rambam, who gives us the broadest description of it. Actually, Rashbam. Right. Rashbam, who gives us the broadest description, who says that it's to keep the bird company, because otherwise the bird's going to think that no one's around. It's going to get lonely, and the bird's going to leave the dovecot.
So it's like it's forming a little community, you know, together.
Little pet psychology here for the lunch birds. That seems to be the idea.
I'm assuming to the owner, not all birds look alike.
Yes, and we're going to have to discuss that. That's part of this discussion about dedicating the birds. What happens if there's a gray bird and there's a black bird and there's a white bird and you dedicated this one, you find that one? Yeah, they know. The breeders are cognizant of which bird is what. You know, for us, we get very easily confused. But yes. Okay, so that's the opening part of the discussion. So the Gemara asks, we're now about 10 lines off from the bottom. Ubeis Hillel lamale lemeimar zeva zeani notel. Why does Beis Hillel require that I specify which birds I want verbally? Lema mikanani notel lamachar. Why isn't it sufficient for Beis Hillel to just say, I'm going to take from this general group? Why do you need me to tell you which bird it's going to be? Dedicate all of them. V'chi teima Beis Hillel les lehu breira. So your first answer, the Gemara is going to give two answers. Your first answer is Beis Hillel does not believe in breira. In other words, the idea of breira, remember, is retroactive selection, right? Meaning that later on something is going to happen that is going to clarify what my intent was originally. So originally I said, I'm going to be taking birds from here. When, in the end, I actually take these two birds, that shows that that was what I was dedicating initially. there's a lot of discussion about where you can do Breira, where you can't do Breira. And does it apply by Deraisas? Does it apply by Derabanan? Rashi here gets stuck in the mix because he talks about this whole discussion as a Derabanan. But I didn't want to get caught into Breira because we'll spend a lot of time later in this Masechta on Breira, I think. But the point is, maybe your reason is Beis Hillel says you have to identify right now which birds you want. You don't have the option of retroactive identification on Yom Tov and saying these were the birds I meant from the beginning. I don't believe in Breira. He says if that's true, then I have a problem because I think Beis Hillel does believe in Breira. And here we get into a discussion regarding Tumah. Remember that if there is a mace in the house, so clearly there is Tumah in the house itself. However, there's also this weird quantum theory sort of Tumah that leaves the house. And the way it works is that the Tumah leaves the house via the exit through which the body is going to be taken. So, for example, if the house has a particular window that is large enough for them to take the body out, and right outside that window is an awning, and standing under that awning is some guy, the result is that since the body is leaving via that window, while the body is still in the house, that person is Tamei. The Tumah is projected forth from that particular exit, to which the logical question is, well, what if there are multiple potential exits? Now where does the Tumah go? That's the discussion. And this is where clearly Breira is going to be relevant, because you're going to say, when they take the body out of one of the exits, that demonstrates which one it was all along, and therefore Tumah only... Exactly. But Tanan, he says, if you're going to tell me Beis Hillel does not believe in Breira, 8-9 ends up on the bottom, Vatnan, Mishnah says, Hames Babayas Velo Psachim Harbe, Kulan Tameyan. If there is a body in a house, and there are many exits or entrances, depending on how you look at it, to the house, Kulan Tameyan. All of them are now Tame, because we don't know which one it's going to be. Niftach Echod Mehan. If one of them is then opened, as in that's the one we're going to use, Hu Tamei v'kulon tahorin. So that one is Tamei, and the rest of them are going to be tahor. Now, that's not to contradict the previous line. The previous line, as Rashi notes, either they were all open or they were all closed. Now what we're saying is, if only one of them is open, then that's the one that's Tamei, even though we haven't done anything yet. Chashav lo tzio be'echad mehen. What if he planned to use a particular one of the windows? Oh, b'chalon sheish bar ba'al arba, or one of the windows is for tefach by for tefach, then matzelas akol apsachim kulan. All of the other entrances, all of the other exits, are now going to be fine. The 4x4 tefach, the idea is that's the minimum size for taking the body out.
Okay, in the first case, was it retroactive? In other words, if all the
Which doors, one do you mean by the first case?
If all the doors were closed,
yeah.
If all the doors are closed and you open one of the doors and say, I've taken the body out here,
yeah.
Does that mean that anyone that was under one of the other doors at the time before you opened it, are they Tame or it's Tawar?
So wait for the Gemara.
I will wait for the Gemara.
That may address your question. Beishamai Omrim. On this statement where, if you thought you were going to take him out of one of them, then you save all the other entrances. Beishamai says that only works if you planned it before the guy died. Meaning, if you planned it after the guy died, then your thought of, I'm taking him out of this entrance, cannot remove the Tumah, because the Tumah is already in place. You can't change what's already there. Beis Hillel disagrees and says, no, even after the person dies, you can think, I am taking the body out of this entrance, and then retroactively, and this is the part that I think speaks to your question, retroactively the others will lose whatever Tumah we had given them. So Beis Hillel is accepting the idea of Breira, right? The guy died at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. At 5 o'clock in the evening, we decided we're taking him out of this particular space, out of this entrance. All the Tumah from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock is now void. That's Brera. So how can you tell me Beis Hillel doesn't believe in Brera? So the Gemara answers,
what are the status ways of all these doorways prior to taking the mace out? In that 4-hour interval.
Yeah.
How do we look? We haven't taken the mace out.
Yeah, we decided where he's going?
And let's say we haven't decided yet.
So right now they're all besafek essentially.
They're all besafek. It's not like a moksa bein hashmashes, right? It's slightly a different type of analysis because unless you're saying they're all tamei, because we haven't decided which one's coming out.
Well, let's take a practical case. Okay, there is truma underneath the awning outside one of these exits. Right, a kohen comes along and he takes the truma and he eats it.
Right.
Then at 5:00, we decided that we're taking it out of a different exit.
Right. So now
Cohen's fine.
The Cohen's fine.
Yeah.
I understand, but let's say we needed to determine earlier if the Cohen's fine or not before we decided to take someone out of the exit because the Cohen now wants to do a vaida.
The answer is going to be if he does it, and as long as we use the other exit, I think he's going to be fine.
Fine.
That's my understanding. That's the definition of what we're doing.
Right.
So the Gemara says, does Beis Hillel believe in Brera, or does he not believe in Brera?
Wouldn't he be tamei until the time is decided?
Suffolk. He's the suffolk. But suffolk such that either he's 100% tamei or he's 100% tamei. The Tosus asks an interesting question on this. Tosus says, if you believe in Brera, then how do you have the case of Kulan Tamein? When it said, if the mace is in the house and there are many exits, they're all tamei, how can that be? You're only taking them out of one. So Tosos gives two answers. One answer that he gives is that it's where they then create a new entrance. In other words, when the guy died, there were 5 entrances, and then they created a 6th one after he died. And then you would not remove the tumah from the other 5, because none of the 5 ended up being the right one. That's one answer Tosos gives. It's Tosos Beis Shammai right here. Alternatively, he suggests it's where the body is destroyed in the room. The body never left the room. So the body never left the room, then there was no clarification of this is the exit we're going to use, and therefore the tumah extended from all.
So therefore, that's why I asked my question. So if for some reason the body never leaves, then that kohen is
badei
tumah.
Yes.
Badei
tumah. But that should not make a difference. If it's machshava, if you make the decision
before the body, you haven't made it.
You don't even have to take the body yet. If you just thought I'm going to take it out of a certain...
It's an interesting question. I'm not sure that's true. But that's going to tie into Rebbe Chanan Wasserman. So keep the question in mind. One of the questions that's involved in his discussion here is how exactly your purification of these other windows is working. Is it via your thought? Wait till you see. Hey,
but the Brisa does say choshev loitzi be'echad. It doesn't say you actually took him out.
Understood. Hang in there. It could be true. You know, I wrote this up 3 days ago. I've forgotten what Rav Chanan says. So the Gemara says that we seem to have Beis Hillel supporting Brera when you're dealing with the body. So why doesn't Beis Hillel support Brera when it comes to the birds for Yom Tov? So the Gemara is going to offer 2 answers. First answer, Ha'itmar Allah, we learned regarding this, meaning regarding the body case, Amar Rabba l'tayr es hapsachim mikan ulahaba. Rabba says that Beis Hillel is not claiming, and this is your question, Beis Hillel is not claiming that retroactively the windows or the exits or whatever they are all become tahor. He's saying from this moment forward, they're now tahor. You can't do anything retroactively. I don't believe in Brera. It's only from here going. I've heard of Rabbi Oshia, and so Rabbi Oshia said as well, L'tar sefsach mikan ulahaba in l'mafrei Allah. It's only from then going forward. It's not retroactive. That's one answer. So then clearly, Beis Hillel does not adopt Brera.
I don't understand. I'm sorry.
What he's saying is that at 5:00, they decide they're taking the body out of this exit.
Right.
And from 5:00 onward, this exit is the only thing that's tamei.
Right.
But anything that happened between 1:00 and 5:00, all those exits were tamei.
Tamei. Okay.
Our kohen who was under the awning with exit number whatever is tamei.
So there's no lamafreya, therefore there's no brera.
Correct.
Right.
Rava amar lo'olam lamafreya. Rava says no, it is retroactive. However, v'hacha hayinu taima, but here, this is the reason why Beis Hillel accepts Breira. Regarding the birds, Beis Hillel won't accept Breira. Why? Because the bird case is unique. We have a completely different concern. Beis Hillel believes in Breira. However, Dilma mitaldel v'shavik, mitaldel v'shavik, become mitaldel nidi dilo chazilei. Our concern is that he's going to pick up the bird, put it down. Pick up the bird, put it down. The carrying bird is that he doesn't want. In other words, there's a completely different reason, and we brought this in the Gemara earlier when we had this discussion about dedicating the birds for Yom Tov. We have a separate consideration, which is we want to make sure that that he is going to actually have birds to use on Yom Tov, and the birds that he picks are right for him. That's what we want to make sure of, because otherwise you have a situation like Rashi said initially, in which you're picking up birds and putting them down, picking up birds and putting them down. Right? We don't want that. That's carrying shelo letzarech. Not carrying, but moving motzah shelo letzarech. You can't do that. So Beis Hillel only required that I specify the birds in advance, because Beis Hillel was afraid that if you don't, you're going to have all these unsuitable birds that you pick up on Yom Tov. That's what Beis Hillel was trying to solve. But you're right. Otherwise, Beis Hillel would have been fine saying all these birds are dedicated, and eventually it will turn out that it was, you know, this particular pair. You follow?
Follow.
So that's our idea, that this is so no
like more like Rashi than Rambam in some ways. No.
No, I think it works either way.
Like Rambam. I was thinking it's more like Rambam.
No, it works either way. Rambam was within Beis Shammai's view.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. But again, so our first approach is this. Why does Beis Hillel require that I specify the birds? Because Beis Hillel doesn't believe in Breira. But what about regarding the mace? So one answer is he didn't believe in Breira regarding the mace either. The other answer is, you're right, he believes in Breira, but he has a different reason for it in this case. His reason is because he's afraid about picking up birds on Yom Tov and finding that they're too thin. That's his consideration. That is our second answer for Beis Hillel. Our first answer, why he wants you to identify specific birds, is that he doesn't believe in Breira. Our second answer is, we want to make sure that he doesn't find that the birds are too thin. If you take a look at Rashi, I had a little trouble understanding what Rashi was trying to say here, frankly. But let's take a look at it together. If you see Rashi, Rava Amar La'olam Lemafreya, it is five lines up from the bottom in Rashi, the end of the line. Rava Amar La'olam Lemafreya Nami Mitarin Beis Hillel De Islu Breira. It is retroactive that these windows are all, or exits are all tower. V'ha'ra b'mas nisen ha'inu taima tzarech levarer v'lomar elu ani notel. The reason why in the Mishnah, you have to specify and say, I'm going to take these birds. Dilma lamachar metaltel ubodek hashemenim v'shavik ha v'shakel idach. The concern is that tomorrow, on Yom Tov, he's going to start examining the birds and saying, this looks like a plump bird. He's going to pick this one up, and he's going to put down the other one. He's going to put down this one, pick up another one. Nimsa metaltel mashalo hizmin. The result will be that he's going to be picking up birds that he didn't dedicate. Because he only intended for his needs.
So, but isn't
even
that,
though he said all of them, he didn't mean all of them.
Then the logic would be the exact opposite. In other words, if he's not physically picking up the birds before Yom Tov, and he's just mentally saying those two,
yeah,
he may have picked two wrong birds because wasn't close to see which birds they were, like to pick them up and weigh them. If he says that I'm taking all of the birds, then he could, they're not mokshe to him because he's dedicating all of the birds, and then he has that ability to get the ones that he wants.
You would think that Breira would override this very point. Isn't that the power of Breira?
So I would say two things.
He's qualifying what Breira really means. Yeah. One would have thought that's the power of Breira. In other words, I don't know which ones I'm going to choose. I don't know whether I'm choosing because it's random, or whether I may not choose them because one is plump and one is not plump?
Two things. Number one, in terms of Howie's question, the assumption is that he can actually... I'm going to say this, and I'm going to contradict it with my second point. My first point is that, yes, he could pick out two birds and say, these are the birds I want, and tomorrow, those are the birds he's going to have.
Okay.
That's number one.
You won't have that problem if he designates all of them, because he knows...
So that brings me to my second statement. And my second statement is that, as I understand what Rashi is saying, and this is the only way I can understand what Rashi is saying, is that the dedication of all of them doesn't really mean dedication of all of them. What it means is, whichever birds here I'm going to end up using, those are the ones that I am dedicating now. And therefore, if I pick up birds on Yom Tov that I don't end up using, I have picked up non-dedicated birds. That's the way that Rashi understands this, and frankly, it's the way the Gemara understands it when it invokes Brera altogether. Because otherwise, who needs to play Brera games? I dedicated 100 birds.
But you have to be, because your assumption is he doesn't need all of them. He's not eating every one that's in
correct.
There. So that's clear that you need him, you need to rely on Brera. He's trying to say that somehow Brera here does not work. Because Brera, there can't be another qualifier other than randomness. And that the randomness shows that if this one is as good as the other one. But if he later is going to pick one because it's plump or because it's skinny, then there Brera doesn't apply. It seems like it's a qualification that Rashi wants to put on Brera. The really Beis Hillel holds of Brera. That's the second terrace. The Beis Hillel holds of Brera. But here, you know what? Brera here doesn't work because there's no randomness here. Because there's a logic of what he's going to choose, and we're afraid he's going to pick up something, and but he's now discovered it's skinny. That's not where Brera helps.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like Rashi's saying, which is finish a little bit, maybe.
He's saying there's 100. I'm going to take 2 out of the 100.
Yeah.
And that's what you're concerned about now.
Correct. It's still odd, but yes, I think that's what's going on. He only had the ones that he is going to end up using in mind. That's the way to read it. But the Gemara is not done. That's Rava's answer, but the Gemara now has a question. The last line on the page. V'ha'amrit ba'omed va'omer zevazani no tel sagya. He says, wait a minute. You told me that it is sufficient for him to stand there and say, I want these. How is that going to tell him which birds are fat enough? Pointing the two of them isn't going to do that. So the Gemara gives two answers. First answer, Hani Mili me'erev Yom Tov. This is talking about where he does this before Yom Tov, and therefore, if you take a look at the bottom Rashi, before you flip the page, Hani Mili me'erev Yom Tov, Kolomar, Hecha de'yada me'erev Yom Tov da'hani hu da'azminan. He knows before Yom Tov, I am dedicating these. Desu bein'chen k'chushin bein'chen sh'meinim lo shakya l'acharini. So that he's not going to take others. Whether it turns out that these are plump, or whether it turns out that these are skinny, he's not taking others. Because he knows, definitively, that the rest of them are muktza. Aval, flipping the page. B'yom tov asur. But you can't do that on Yom Tov. The ones that you thought were thin, were the ones that you thought were plump, turned out not to be plump. The ones you thought were thin, turned out not to be thin. And you end up picking up birds that are not suitable. That's one explanation, is that dedicating it before Yom Tov will force you to use these and only these. Inami, alternatively, Zimnin demishtakri kulu kachushim. He may find that all of them are thin. Mm-hmm. And then he's going to say, forget the whole thing. I'm not going to bother. And then he won't have his Simchas Yom Tov. So what we tell him is, dedicate two specific ones before Yom Tov. And the understanding is, you're going to use them. Like it or not, you're going to make use of these birds. We're forcing him to commit, is what we're doing.
In this case that we're talking about now, is Beit Shammai still holding that you have to physically pick them up?
Beit Shammai all the way through holds you have to physically pick them up, yes.
So what is the difference between picking them up and not picking them up if the end conclusion is about the same? In other words, Beit Shammai says you're picking them up to show that you're not going to have regret later. Okay, and Beit Hillel says you have to have machshava, so you won't have to regret later because of the weight.
So keep in mind, our original thought with Beit Shammai wasn't about that. Our original thought with Beit Shammai was we're dealing with the first batch, and there's an extra reason to think you won't be serious about it, and you're going to end up leaving them, and that's why he wants you to do it. If you're not dealing with the first batch, he agrees with Beis Hillel. It's sufficient for you to just say, these are the ones I'm taking.
So he's agreeing with Beis Hillel?
Correct. Okay. Only first batch is the machlok, yes, correct. So this was all interesting, and there's a lot you could do with it, but what caught my eye was Rav Elchanan on this, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, the Kovetz Shiurim. You see, Rashi explained that within the view of Rabba Rav Oshia, right, when we were answering the question of does Beis Hillel believe in Breira or not, so Rabba and Rav Oshia said Beis Hillel is discussing their status going forward, right? Beis Hillel says the exits are Tahor going forward, and Beis Shammai says no, they remain Tamei going forward because nothing's happened to change them. Right? That was the Machlokes then, regarding the exits within Rabba Rav Oshia. So the Kovetz Shiurim, Rav Elchanan Wasserman asks, how did they lose their Tumah? How did these exits that were Tamei from 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock, and now you tell me at 5 o'clock, if you tell me retroactively it turns out they were never Tamei, I'm good with that. Right? The rule is, the exit through which it's going to be taken out, that's the one that's Tamei. So it turns out these exits were never Tamei. But if you're going to tell me, like Rabbi Rav Oshia say, that Beis Hillel does not believe in Breira, and therefore, from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock, these were Tamei, and now presto, they're not, how did they stop being Tamei? You didn't dip them in a mikvah. Right? What is it that alters their status? The fact that I decide I'm not taking it out that way? How does that eliminate Tumah from something?
It shouldn't. If you don't hold Breira, it shouldn't.
But that's the thing, but that's exactly what it says. That's exactly what it says. It does. If you don't hold Breira, then that means it was Tamei until now, and then it's not Tamei.
No.
Yeah. If you don't believe in Breira...
If you don't believe in Breira, then nothing you can do later should change its status. If it was Tamei at one time, it should stay Tamei forever.
Well, that's the question, because if you don't believe in... It's the opposite. If you do believe in Breira, it was never Tamei.
Correct.
If you don't believe in Breira, then it was Tamei until I decided to use this entrance, and then they became Tahor. Presto. Magic.
Once you physically take it out of a certain door.
Forget physically. Once you plan to take it out of a certain door.
Once you plan. You don't actually, it seems like you don't even have to do it.
Yeah.
Because Taisa said, right, so if something happened, if you never took it out.
So 105, I can decide that I'm taking out that door, and that's it.
Method. So from 1 to 105, the other exits were Tamei, and at 105, they stopped being Tamei.
But maybe you can say this is a special locha, because intuitively, what would make something outside of this building Tamei anyway?
The answer is it's Tumas Oel.
It's Tumas Oel, even though everything's closed?
Yeah.
Because there's
because that's the way Tumas Oel works.
That's the way Tumas Oel works, right?
Yeah. Take a look at Rav Elchanan, because he's smart. In Source Hay. He says, V'tzarek lahavin. You have to then understand. Dim kain my time at the Beis Hillel of the Metar and I de machshava gereda. What's the logic in Beis Hillel saying it's Tahor just by having thought it? That you just think, I'm taking it out of this exit, and now presto, all the other exits are Tahor. V'kola kelim ein an olin mitumasan ela al yidei shinoi maisa. The rule ordinarily is that if a kli is Tameh, you have to change it physically in order for it to become Tahor, right? Unless you can dip it in a mikvah or whatever it is. Vihine, Bereish Paraka Omer, he quotes to the Gemara in Kiddushin, which I gave you in the brackets, the context. It's talking about a kli that you decided to use for a particular purpose. Okay? You had an item that you were creating. You were creating a tool. The tool wasn't entirely complete. But you decide it's now usable. So, the Gemara there, Parach, the Gemara there asks, Lamanda Amar Asi Dibur Umevatel Dibur. According to the view that if I make a verbal declaration that creates a certain halachic status, and then I make a countering verbal declaration, the second one cancels the first because they're both of equal weight. That's a principle. That is a basic principle that, according to a certain point of view, a verbal statement can counter the effects of an original verbal statement. So he says, Bishlama miyad maisa eino motzi. The Gemara asks, I understand that a verbal declaration cannot overpower a deed. Deeds are more permanent than verbal declarations. Diloasi dibur mabatal maisa. Speech cannot override deed. Ela mide machshava tapik. But, he says, speech should overpower thought. So, for example, let's say I have a piece of leather that I worked in order to turn it into a seat cushion. It's not done yet. But I decided it's done enough that I can now use it. Now it can receive tuma. What if I then make a statement? I didn't use it yet. I just thought it. Then I make a verbal statement. I say, you know what? This isn't ready for me to use it yet. Does that override? The Gemara says no. And the Gemara doesn't understand why. Speech can't overpower deed. Okay, so if you had made all of the right actions to finalize this thing, you did your Gemara Malacha, you completed the fixing of this, the preparation of this cushion, then I understand why no speech you make is going to counter the deed.
Okay, but in that case you just gave.
Yeah.
The speech, if you say no, it's not ready, doesn't that counter?
Because you haven't said already. That's what he's saying, it doesn't. And then, and that's what the Gemara wants to know. Why doesn't it?
The Gemara assumes
that there was no maisa.
Correct. No maisa. You haven't used it, you haven't finalized it. That's correct. So Rav Chanan says, Vilcharakasha. Vilcharakasha. He says, this is difficult. De hahevdel bein dibor lemaisa, eino be'ezo ofen nasa. Elama nasa. He says, the difference between the weight of speech and the weight of deed isn't a simple hierarchy of, you know, thought, speech, deed. That's not the way it works. Rather, the difference is in terms of, he says, it's what you did. Shakore shem truma b'machshava habamaisa. So for example, if I think regarding my produce that a certain section is now going to be truma, that's a deed. Even though I did it by thinking, that's still an action. V'makadesh isha b'kesef lachar shloshim yom. If a man gives a woman money, and he says to her, hare'at, after 30 days, that's mikri dibor. That's called speech, not deed. Even though he did an action, it's only called speech because it's not active yet. It's only active in 30 days, so it doesn't have the weight of a deed. The in Cain, if so, if the way I look at the weight of your, I'm using the wrong word, actions, right? The weight of your interventions, right? If I look at them, not based on the physical action of, was it a speech, was it a thought, was it a deed? But I look at it as, what was its relative strength? What was its power? Did it have the power that I consider light? Did it have the power that I consider intermediate? Did it have the power that I consider heavy? So he says, Vin Cain, Mainaf Gamina im ha gmarkli haya yade maisa o yade machshava. Why is the Gemara asking this question about, well, speech should overpower thought? It doesn't make a difference whether it was via a thought or whether it was via a deed. Dimamanoshach, im gmarkli hashiva maisa, if completing the item, the seat cushion, is called a deed in the sense that it has the effectiveness of a deed. In Cana filu nigmar al yedei machshava have maisa. Then even if it happened because you thought it, it's still a deed. V'im gmar kli lo avi maisa. And if completing the kli doesn't count as a deed, my mahani shenigmar al yedei maisa. Then who cares whether it was completed via thought or via action? Either gmar kli matters, or Gemar Kli does not matter. What Rav Elchanan is asking is, we are assuming a false hierarchy.
That's not what you do. It has to do with the dynamics of the situation, no?
Correct. Correct. It's about the weight assigned to whatever you did. Right. It's not about the mechanism you used. Speech, thought, deed is an illusion. It's in my interaction with the world. Is my interaction with the world is my interaction with the world something which is ephemeral, and we'll call that thought? Is my interaction with the world something that has an impact, but the impact is pending, like a kedushin after 30 days? We'll call that dibur. Or is it something that has legal status as of right now? We'll call that maisa.
Okay. So if someone has machshava about a pillow that's not really ready yet,
mm-hmm.
Okay. And his machshava is, it's ready. And then someone else who sees this pillow that's not ready and doesn't realize it's makabel tuma, he could still become tummy based on someone else's machshava.
Whatever the owner is.
Who may not even be there.
Yeah. Yes, that's always true. So he says, V'yesh lomar, he says, you could say, Delo mikri maisa elahecha shahadin chal mitchila leolam. So he says this really novel thing. At least I thought it was novel. He says, you know what a deed is? It has the weight of an action if it is effective now, forever. Because of what happened at this moment in time, it will permanently be so. Kamo b'kidusha isha. Like kiddushin. Not kiddushin that are going to be binding in 30 days, but kiddushin that are going to be binding right now. D'bishas kiddushin ne'esra le'olah. That from the moment of the kiddushin now, she's now an eshes ish for the foreseeable future. Aval ilu hayinu omrim. But in the imaginary halachic world, in which we would say that's not the way Kiddushin works. Kiddushin is actually effective every moment. There's a new Kiddushin every instant. And that is what is prohibiting. She wasn't prohibited from the instant initially forever. But rather, your deed is now going to create a new kiddushin every moment. That's not called an action then. We would call that speech, because it's something which is going to have an impact later. I mean, it's an imaginary thing, so it's hard to sort of associate with this. Like, how do you know whether kiddushin works one way or kiddushin works the other way? He's just taking it as a given. But his point is...
Well, he gives an example of why it's not, there's no permanency.
Okay, yes, but in a normal kiddushin case... But in a normal kiddushin case, how do I know that it doesn't?
You don't see it, but in the second case...
Right. He says, Kimo, the Mekadish Lachar Shloshim, where you say, Harayat, after 30 days, right? The Yochalat Sotol Shloshim, where he can still back out. That's called deep work. V'zeu tam achiluk bigmar kli. So he says that's the rationale for the distinction when it comes to completing the kli in the Gemara and Kiddushin. Im nigmar al yedei maisa al yedei machshava. As far as whether it's completed by deed or by thought. Dim nigmar al yedei maisa. If it's completed via deed, nasa mitchila kli la'olam. Then it becomes a kli with your action. You made it ready for use as a seed cushion, and now it is a kli for the foreseeable future. Ubenigmar al yedei machshava. However, if you complete it via your thought, you just decided, I think this is already usable. I'm going to use it already. Din kli mischadesh alav v'chol sha'ah al yedei koach machshavaso harishona. So he says, then it gains status of a kli via that thought at every moment until you actually do a maisa, until you do a deed. It's as though you thought it's going to be a kli in a moment, and it's going to be a kli in 2 moments, and it's going to be a kli in an hour, and it's going to be a kli in a day. The dami lemekadesh lachar shloshim, like kiddushin that's after 30 days. He says that's the way that it's that's the way that it works. Your thought of I'm not improving this further, pending your actual action, each successive instant is the result of your new machshava. Whereas if you did it via deed, it's now permanently assigned to that status.
But there must be some limitations. If I make a kli and decide that this paper here is a kli, and the rabbanim or everybody else says, there's no way in the world this is a kli. This is not a kli. Whatever you do, it's not a kli.
Well, it has to have functionality.
It has to have functionality. It has to be something.
It has
right?
to be some functionality. That's
why right. that's yeah.
Yeah. Thinking that something is a kli doesn't mean... No, but calling it a name. It means that you have a particular role that it's going to actually be suited to play. If I decide that this is an airplane, it's not an airplane.
No.
So
I'm just saying that you have to look at almost every object and decide, you know, because I'm learning Kelim right now
and Mishnah Yom. Yeah, right. So then, you know, Kala Kelim,
yeah. But still, there are limitations.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that means during all this time, it's being renewed every moment, but that kli is always susceptible to tuma. Okay.
Yes.
So now applying that in reverse to our case of maize.
So now so we have to do.
Okay.
But that's the way he explains the Gemara in Kiddushin about the Dibor and so on, is that the reason why the Gemara there asks that your Dibor should be able to override your Machshava is because your machshava was really like a dibur. although it's less than a dibur. Because there he said, Asi dibur mevatal dibur. I'm not entirely clear, I have to admit, I'm fitting that into Kiddushin. But let's see what he does. He says, Ubazeh pligi beis Shammai ubeis Hillel, I added in the word kan. This is now the debate between beis Shammai and beis Hillel here, regarding Tumah. Lenin Pesach Shasof Tumah Latzeis Bo, regarding the exit through which the Tumah is in fact going to depart, because that's the one you're going to use for the body. The Beit Shammai Savri, the Bishar Shahaya Bosof Tumalatzes, Cholala Pesach Din Zela Olam, Ajiz Batalay De Maisa. Beit Shammai's view is that in the beginning you didn't know which exit was going to have the body leave, and therefore all of the exits are Tameh, and the only way it's going to lose it is via an actual deed. You have to do something. Ubeis Hillel Savri, Shetum Aso Hi Mipnei Shebechol Sha'a. Who omed liya sof tumalatzeis. But Beis Hillel's vision of it is that it's actually every moment it's the body is going to come out this way, the body is going to come out this way, the body is going to come out this way. And therefore, gam achshav b'shazu, right now, it's below of nation asam b'tchila solazeh, not that it initially was committed for this purpose ad infinitum. So the concept of sof tumalatzeis, as Rav Hanan views it, is that at every instant, you look at the situation and say, okay, there's Tumah here for this instant. Tumah for the next instant. Tumah for the next instant. When the moment comes when you decide it's going out X door, all the other ones don't renew their Tumah. He says, Ela dina Tumah mischadesh alav tamid, the status of Tumah is continually being renewed. Mibnei shigam achshav sova Tumah latzeis bo, because right now as well the Tumah is going to depart via this exit. Shemachi, and therefore, im chishev lahotzi bepesach acher, shuv ein din Tumah mischadesh alav. Once he decides he's going to use a different exit, the Tumah is not renewed. Lemela tahor. See, I don't know about everything else he said for Machshava Dibur Maisa, but that last sentence that he says is the key. What he's saying is, again, what was our problem? Our problem was that within the view of Beis Hillel, as understood by Rabbi Ramoshia, he was not arguing Breira.
Right.
He was saying that from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock, all the exits were Tameh, and at 5 o'clock you decide it's going out this exit, now all the exits are Tahor. And our question was, well, how did you eliminate the Tumah? And his answer is, you don't need to.
It's not a magic process. He has a logical explanation for that process.
At every moment, at 1 o'clock in 1 second, 1 o'clock in 2 seconds, and 1 o'clock in 3 seconds, and so on, there was a constant re-evaluation of the situation, and it generated Tumah. And then at 5 o'clock, the situation changed, and therefore the result of that re-evaluation was different. It's a very interesting way of looking at things. It sounds like something he's making up out of whole cloth. That's why he brings in the Gemara Kiddushin, is to give it, you know, an anchor. But it's a great way of looking at it.
So there is no suffix to it's actual two from 1 to 5.
Yes.
Correct.
Well, that's true, however you understand Rabbi Ravoshia have to be saved.
Now we understand how the mechanism of how Hillel works.
How this Hillel works.
Yeah.
Without Breira.
Right. Good. We'll pick up, God willing, in 3 weeks. Yeah.